Thank you for tuning in to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. I'm Maria Vasquez-Boyd with ArtSpeak Radio here on your dials, and we've got a pretty darn good lineup of folks in the studio to talk with us live. First off, we're going to start with Wayne Courtois and David Wayne Reed. They will both be featured writers for the Celebration of Queerness 2015 this Friday, June 19th, from 7 to 9 at the Writers' Place at 3607 Pennsylvania. So let me tell you about Wayne Courtois. He was born in Portland, Maine, currently lives here in Kansas City, Missouri. He's checking to make sure that that's right. he lives in Kansas City, Missouri. He's a graduate of the MFA program at the University of North Carolina, Greensboro. He's the author of the memoir, Report from Winter, as well as novels My Name is Rand, Tales My Body Told Me, and In the Time of Solution 9. His fiction, poetry, and nonfiction have appeared in numerous journals, most recently Chelsea Station magazine, Asakaris, a journal of gay poetry, and Jonathan. His poetry also is included in the anthology Hibernation and Other Poems by Gay Bards. Welcome, Wayne.
Thank you.
We also have the multi-talented David Wayne Reed. Hi, honey. He's been described as an actor, writer, and a bon vivant. Mm-hmm. As well as a one-man classic rock circus. I love that.
Yeah.
So your most recent play was Help Yourself, which debuted in February. And it was really sort of about a seminar where the theater goers attended a seminar based on a self-help guru. And that was really a lot of fun, wasn't it?
It was a great time. It's great to kind of break that wall.
I love the line that says, life gets exciting when you start rewriting.
Life gets exciting when you start rewriting, yeah.
I wouldn't talk so fast, maybe I could get that right. So welcome, my friend.
Thank you
welcome.
So much for having us.
Let's talk about Celebration of Queerness that's happening. Who are some of the other readers, and what is this about?
Well, this is an event that is now in its fourth year. This will be the fourth time that we've had Celebration of Queerness at the Writer's Place.
Mm-hmm.
And it began because the Writer's Place was receiving annually a grant from Missouri Arts Council to do a series of celebrations.
Mm-hmm.
And each one was going to focus on an underserved or minority population of some sort. And it was Writer's Place volunteer and longtime board member Mary Frances Wagner who came up with the idea of, why don't we have an LGBT event?
Absolutely, yeah.
Which was a fantastic idea because they had not done that before at the Writer's Place, and there was really no other place in the city that was having, you know, LGBT literary events.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it was a fantastic idea, and they gave myself and Charles Ferruza the task of putting together the program.
We love our Charles.
Yeah, and so we've been doing this since then, and the attendance has grown every year. So it's a fantastic experience, and people come and they really, really enjoy it.
Is it a way for people to try out maybe some new work, too, or is there a specific subject or theme that you all deal with in this Celebration of Queerness?
Not necessarily. The writers are invited to read whatever they like.
Uh-huh.
It could be published work, or it could be new work, mm-hmm. or whatever they feel would make an impression on the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
We do limit each writer to just 10 minutes mm-hmm. of reading.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be very intense. We actually keep it moving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't do a lot in terms of introductions and bios and
sure,
all of that.
Sure, yeah.
And
cut through
we
all
don't,
that. Uh-huh.
We don't have an intermission because that lets people escape. So
people don't want to escape. They're hanging on everywhere.
So it's great. I mean, it's a two-hour event. I encourage people to come early because we do have wine and cheese and other goodies.
Yeah.
And a band from Lawrence, Bongo Teeny, is going to be
They're
performing.
They're a lot of fun.
They're
yeah.
terrific.
Yeah.
A tremendous band. So there's music and some wine and goodies as well as the reading.
Now, does the roster change every year, or is it pretty much the same core of writers?
I've been on the bill every year.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not bragging, but I'm just saying. I'm glad to see some new blood on the roster this year. There's some great young voices that I'm looking forward to hearing as well, new voices. I'm sharing new work. So I think that it is a great opportunity. Wayne is so polished, and his poem that he wrote to his husband, Ralph, still makes me cry. It's one of the most beautiful things I've ever heard in my life. But it's a great opportunity. As Wayne said, it's 10 minutes, and it's a great way to put out some new material and see what works. It's a great editing process to read your work alive, aloud.
What will you be sharing with us on that day, or with the audience and listeners?
I'm sharing a story. I write, in addition to plays, I write a lot of nonfiction. I'm writing a story about giving up vices amid a gay cruise ship to Alaska. And so it kind of chronicles giving up smoking, drinking, humpback whales, and gay culture out in the open waters. That's my celebration of queerness.
I'm intrigued. Well, of course, we wouldn't expect any less from you, David Wayne.
Oh, well,
Reed. And I know why you're back. You're invited back every year. Not only are you talented, but you're just pretty.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I have a face for radio, so I'm sure all the listeners are getting it good.
We love you. So, you know, I do want to mention some of the other folks that will participate for the celebration of queerness. Annette Billings, one of our friends, our really good friends from Topeka, Kansas.
Yeah, that'll be great because she will be a new face this year.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's just a lovely, lovely person. I'm very happy to have her.
She's very passionate about her writing, and she performs, you know, with passion, too.
Just yes.
A terrific
I'm really
writer.
Excited about that.
And who are some of the other?
Well, I will be reading, and Charles Ferruza.
Yay.
This year, for the first time, we're having Jen Harris, who is a fantastic poet. She is very much involved in the slam poetry community and a tremendous writer and performer, so I'm very excited to have her. Then Miguel Morales, and he's also participated.
He's like my little brother.
Yeah.
He's very much like my little brother. He is the president of the Latino Writers Collective, and he's, you know, he has a unique perspective because not only is he Latino and gay, but he's also a former migrant farm worker, so he's got a really unique sort of view about life in general.
He does, and he, of course, writes about it very well, that's always exciting. We're going to have Sandra Moran
this year,
which is great because she is a well-known local professor and writer. Mm-hmm. She has had three novels published. And I'm really looking forward to that because we have not had her in the program before, and I look forward to getting to know her a little better.
You know, one of the things that I like about Sandra is not only her writing. I mean, she's extremely talented, but she's got a wicked sense of humor that I really like.
Oh yeah, for
sure. She'll be fun.
And then this David Wayne Reed, I don't know who that is.
I don't know. Yeah. I heard
and
you that's a cute.
Terrible.
And we're having Nick Sahn this year.
Huh.
Nick is a fairly recent graduate of the MFA program at UMKC. He is specializing in playwriting, and he's participating for the first time in this particular program. Mm-hmm. So very happy to have him. He also works as marketing director for Unicorn Theater.
I can see the Unicorn Theater from right here.
Well, so you have a pretty eclectic mix of writers, and I think that's going to provide listeners with some really wonderful entertainment. Again, that is this Friday, June 19th, 7 to 9, at the Writer's Place at 3607 Pennsylvania. For more information, writersplace.org. Did you bring something you want to share with us today? Some work, some poetry? Put you on the spot.
Well, no, as a matter of fact, I just happened to have something with me. Isn't that a coincidence?
He came prepared. I love it.
I have this poem that's kind of, in a way, representative of my work.
Uh-huh.
It's I write a lot about my partner, Ralph, and myself. My husband, Ralph, and myself.
Hello. He's here in the studio as part of our live audience.
And this is one of those representative poems. It's called Renewal. We peeled 16 years of magnets off the fridge door. Damn, it looked brand new. Sorry to part ways, Amanda. Tomorrow the Sears man is due. But what of you and I, my love? Say we peeled back our years down to fresh skin. Would we look so blank? In those first photos, our love looked unwritten on. We were too smitten to ponder anything beyond the next embrace. Two guys with emotional lives, already a few lines on our faces. I was 35, you a year less. We didn't guess how long love would last or worry too much about times to come beyond the hope we'd be safe, have our chance to engage in the relationship dance as far as we could. Gay marriage, so unthinkable now, unthinkable then. I wouldn't return to those days of naivete and hunger. No need to be younger. I can wave at those guys from here. Instead, let's keep creating our mating, loving as we do, getting older, growing new.
Bravo, my friend. That's beautiful. Very beautiful. You have some upcoming readings or events beyond the celebration of queerness, or are you just writing just constantly in your from your home or studio?
Well, Miguel Morales and I got the idea.
Oh, him again.
Him again. We had the idea of forming like a local writers group.
Ah, good.
So that some of the gay writers, you know, rather than just having that one-time event,
sure,
we could kind of get together more regularly.
And where do you meet?
We have been meeting at the Like Me Lighthouse.
Right next door.
Yeah, yeah, we've been calling our little group Fabulous Queer Writers of Kansas City.
Terrific.
And we have been meeting at the Like Me Lighthouse every third Sunday mm-hmm. of the month mm-hmm. from 4 to 6 p.m. And I want to invite anyone who is interested to certainly look into our group and look
Absolutely.
At our Facebook page.
Terrific.
It's been we've actually had a couple of readings also in that space mm-hmm. at Like Me Lighthouse, mm-hmm. which is a really good venue for a reading.
Yeah, there's always something going on over there. So
yeah.
it's a terrific organization in the community. So yeah, very good. Very good. David Wayne Reed, what's going on with you? You're writing, and you've had a really busy year, or actually the last couple of years, haven't you?
It's been a really great time.
Yeah,
it's been a great couple of years. I, as you said, I opened a new show, Help Yourself, mm-hmm. a dark comedy about Help Yourself, back in January and February. It's Paragraph Gallery, and that was a great success. I'm very proud of that. So I'm really marketing that, dusting mm-hmm. that off, and getting mm-hmm. that out to other theaters,
mm-hmm.
And working on a new play for the Unicorn as part of their local writer series next year, and so I'll have a new reading of my mm-hmm. next play in February of next year. So I'm working feverishly on getting that together and finding my way in the forest of a new play.
Yeah, you spent a residency in Florida, was it last year?
No, time flies. That
I know,
was actually
like,
January of 2012, but that was a real turning point
for
me professionally.
Because I keep seeing these images of, the beach and all that and the sand. And yeah,
I think that when people look at me, they just see the beach and sun and sand and good times, crashing waves.
Is some of that work from that time at the residency, or is it just sort of flowing forward?
It's a new. I developed my one-man show, Jolly Rancher. What do you call a gay farmer?
Yeah.
A Jolly Rancher. I developed that there, and then came back and then wrote Help Yourself. Mm-hmm. And now I'm working mm-hmm. on a new show about the ideas of legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm particularly mm-hmm. interested in gay family members, and maybe where a family tree forks, and also maybe where a family tree ends. I'm interested in exploring those ideas in this new show.
The expression on your face makes me really intrigued. It's like
I get that all the time. No,
it's like I can see your wheels spinning. So this would be interesting. So when will you think this will come to fruition?
Well, the first reading will be in February at the Unicorn Theater.
Okay.
And I'm you know, I'm very excited to have a director and cast attached to that. It's a really good, healthy detachment in those terms, to be able to see your words in front of you and not be suffocated by the world that you've been in for so long, you know, in your office or your home studio writing. It's a pretty lonely place, so it's great to see it brought to life.
It really is. So is there any last words that you want to share with our listeners, or something that you want to bring up that we haven't discussed at this time?
Well, I do want to particularly thank the Writer's Place for hosting the Celebration of Queerness. And I have been on the board of that organization. I think I'm in my second term now. And I think that more and more people should be aware of the Writer's Place and the many wonderful things that it does. This summer, we're very proud of summer camp sessions that we're going to have for students. It's a program called Writer's Block. And I encourage everyone to look into that. Kids who are wondering, would like something to do this summer, that's a great place to go. So
it is, you know, it does offer a lot for the community, and there's a lot of outreach to youth in that throughout the year.
Absolutely.
So
we provide a lot of programs that, you know, the schools no longer are able to provide, including poetry workshops. And kids just love it. It's for many of them, it's the first time they've had such a creative outlet.
Well, and I can honestly say, too, working with a mentor, working with a working writer, I think is really a strength, you know, in those programs for our youth.
Well, definitely.
You know, how often does that happen, you know?
Well, less and less, especially if you're in Kansas.
Oh, Lord, yes. You're right. You're right, David. You're right. Any last words from you, David, besides that?
Oh, be free. Be who you are. Be gay. I mean, life is short. Live it. Live it
life
up.
Life is short.
You're and come and see us on Friday night.
There you go. Yes, Celebration of Queerness, 7 to 9 p.m. this Friday at the Writer's Place. Thank you both so much for coming in this morning, afternoon. We're going to take a real quick break, and we'll be right back with ArtSpeak Radio.
Thanks, Maria.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Kansas City Council just adopted a new $1.5 billion budget for the next year. The budget is Kansas City's blueprint for what's important to voters, but how does the council figure that out? City Council member and Finance Committee Chair Jan Markison explains how the council did it in the next All Souls Forum, Wednesday at 6 p.m. right here on KKFI.
On the next Sprouts, a look at the Black Lives Matter movement, featuring a speech from the movement's co-founder, Alicia Garza, plus white allies step up in Sonoma County, California, and the Black Brunch, a group who disrupt business as usual. Black Lives Matter on Sprouts, Thursday at noon, right after my place.
And we're back. You're listening to ArtSpeak Radio. I'm Maria Vasquez-Boyd. My next guest, J.T. Daniels, is a Kansas City, Kansas native. He has a passion and love for creating art. He also graduated from Park University with a B.A., with an emphasis in painting and illustration. And currently his work is an in-depth look into style and self-expression. You know, I do want to read another part of your bio, JT, that you sent me, and welcome.
Thank you.
That you mentioned that you were a biracial native, graduated from Wyandotte High School and all that. You're also, you began working at a local not-for-profit Matty Rhodes Center. Are you still there?
Yes. This November will be my third year there.
Wow. Yeah. You're the youth development coordinator there. And so you are also, I like this intro where you say you work on freelance projects, art shows, design murals, and most importantly, being a dad.
Yes, I have a son. He will be 2 years old in September,
but
he's already going through the terrible twos.
Honey, the fun's just now beginning.
I tell it to my wife. She's at home with him right now. If I didn't have her, then she wouldn't. I wouldn't. I don't know. I have to give a quick snippet. Right now, we're trying to train him or teach him to say daddy, to refer to me as daddy, or poppy. We're teaching him Spanish and English.
There you go.
And he's he's like, no, you're JT. I'm like, no, Poppy, Daddy. Daddy? Yeah. No, you're JT, so.
And who is to the side of you?
This is my intern, Harmony Moore. So she's going to be with me until August. And she's trying to learn how to be an artist. She's still in high school. I think she's going to be her senior year at Lincoln Prep coming up.
Welcome.
So
thank you for having me.
Yeah, she's tagging along with me everywhere I go. So
terrific. Let's talk about your work, JT.
Okay.
Your work focuses on varied aspects of human hair.
Let's talk about currently.
So how did that come about?
Well, honestly, I was just looking for something different to do. I've had the idea kind of floating around in sketchbooks since like 2009. I got the idea when I was at Park, actually. I was in one of my classes, mm-hmm. kind of doodling away. And I got the idea for kind of a banging hairdo. Mm-hmm. And I had a conversation with I have twin sisters. So mm-hmm. at the time, they're 2 years younger than me. So at the time, we were talking about their hairstyles and just kind of being biracial. I started thinking about that. And all the times my grandmothers had to give them a perm or had to pull the curling iron through their hair. And then having them talk about wanting to cut their hair off so they can wear like wigs or something else because it's easier to take care of. So on top of that, I got really into... there's an artist I got really into, David Cho. I was really into just how mm-hmm. messy and dirty his work
mm-hmm.
was.
Mm-hmm.
But then kind of how you can get lost in just finding designs and different things, mm-hmm. like automatic drawing, mm-hmm. like Jackson mm-hmm. Pollock would do. And I figured the best way to combine all these different styles that I was interested in, like illustration, fine art, graphic design, whatever else, was to try to paint realistic-looking faces of people that I either knew
mm-hmm.
or had images of or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I would graphically distort their hair. So...
No. And you do that in a beautiful way. It's almost like script, as though the hair mm-hmm. has sort of a writing of its own.
Yeah, it has. It doesn't look like it, but it has specific rules. Kind of mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. when you look at a Basquiat interview.
Yeah,
he talks about his artwork, and it looks very childlike.
Yeah.
But he has to draw it a certain way. So with the hair, it has to follow some sort of form or function to it.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
if it doesn't follow a specific flow or function, then I don't like it.
You know, the richness of the culture of hair,
mm-hmm.
too, for women is really important.
Yeah, I think it was either right before or right after that Chris Rock documentary came out.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest catalyst for us, so I have twin sisters.
Right.
One of them was really into graphic design. She was mm-hmm. in school for graphic design. And the other one was doing, she was getting her license, her esthetician license. So she was designing hair. So I was like, I'm going to physically design the hair.
So would you say then they were sort of an inspiration to your work?
That
you were already sort of...
Yeah, we had a kind of a... Not a tumultuous upbringing, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. we just fought a lot. And I told my mom one day, I was like 18, we probably wouldn't have a decent conversation until one of us turned 25. And then right about the time I came up with the idea, one of us was hitting 25. Either they were or I were, I don't know, something like that. So,
well, and for our listeners, your website is jtdanielsart.com?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Now, let's talk about something that, let me ask you if the most recent controversy about Rachel Dolezal, that has prompted any work or ideas or inspired you to...
I kept track of it because I've been watching just the social climate in general, like Ferguson, like police brutality,
right.
and I have police officers that are in my family, so I kind of see both sides of that.
Yeah.
And then Rachel Dolezal... I thought it was Dolezal at first, but Dolezal. I actually had a conversation with my grandmother
mm-hmm.
and my grandfather most recently
mm-hmm.
about being raised biracial. And I have mm-hmm. I found a few other friends that are biracial as well, but they've had different upbringings. And my
mm-hmm.
upbringing was mm-hmm. slightly different. So I have one friend who, like, his family was completely overwhelmed about it, and they loved it, and they did everything immersed culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of feel like I spent a lot of time kind of just questioning who I was.
Yeah.
Like, everyone's like, are you going to pick a side? Are you more black? Are you
mm-hmm.
more white? Are you
mm-hmm.
more this? And I was like, I spent a lot of time just saying, I don't want to do any of that. I just want to be a person.
Right.
And then
right.
now as I'm older, I'm like, well, how does my work really speak to, like, I was raised around black family and
mm-hmm.
white family,
mm-hmm.
but I'm JT Daniels, most
yeah.
importantly.
Yeah.
But how does my work reflect the sense of ethnicity that I have?
Uh-huh.
And, I think some of the work that I want to do now, like talking about the hair,
uh-huh.
is like how hair changes up in between cultures, and then how that reflects how we see ourselves. So if you look at the photos of Rachel, mm-hmm. and you see the photos of like when she was younger, mm-hmm. then it shows her when she was older, and she said she identified as black. Mm-hmm. Her mm-hmm. hairstyle obviously changed. So.
Yeah, well, and I bring that up because I know some of the posts that are floating around Facebook, and certainly you know the subject of hair comes to mind. You know, when I see photographs of her, mm-hmm. and I wondered if that had somehow.
I've been trying to wrap my head around it. I called up a few friends and a few mentors, and I'm like, this is the kind of work that I've been doing. Yeah. A, number one, do you think it's interesting? Because I'm self-deprecating to the max. I am a self-hater.
A lot of artists are, though.
I will make something, and I'll throw it away in a heartbeat and just hate it. But I kind of wanted to have a conversation with them. So, is this something that I'm making right now? Is this something that I can have a message through? Or is it something I can use as commentary? Mm-hmm. Or is it something mm-hmm. that I should just leave alone or talk about in a different way? Mm-hmm. And most of it was originally it started building up towards talking about like black males, interracial people mm-hmm. in general, and just saying you are important because for a while it's just like you should cut your hair off, you should get perms, and then the natural movement like move through. It's like you should feel happy and proud about who you are. And then looking at that, like they came up with transracial, which is supposed to be infuriating to transgender people. And for me, I'm kind of like, I didn't know you could choose your race. I thought you just kind of get this cocktail mix and you made of it what you will.
Well, and in fact, when you say choosing a race, when you choose a race, are the expectations then, for instance, and a group show that I was I had participated in, that the mindset was that, well, I've walked into this gallery and I want to see Mexican art. I want to see Latino mm-hmm. art. And what is that? What is that expectation?
I know for me personally, I ask questions. I'm like, well, you know, technically I'm black.
Yeah.
And when I put on my papers, I'm biracial, but I have to identify as black because of my father is, and I don't have anything against that.
Yeah.
But I don't always make black art. Like, I don't paint pictures of black Jesus or, you know, African tribe stuff because that's not what I know about.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
I work at Matty Rose, which is servicing the Latino population a lot heavily.
Right.
And I'm learning Spanish. My wife is Latino or Latina, and my son is part Hispanic now.
Uh-huh.
But that's not my upbringing. So like they asked me to show in the gallery, and I'm reserved because like I don't think I know that culture enough to really speak on anything about that. And I think nowadays it's like people are afraid to just say, you know, I am who I am. And like I just like I have an American culture. I just identify myself as American, but then I also see these are my upbringings, these are my different things. And I think my culture is more referred to who I was brought up around and who my family was per se, as opposed to just my specific skin color. Even though that's how everyone else will put me under denomination, like you're black, you're white, depending on who you hang out with.
Yeah, and I think sometimes, you know, we become, once we've got those labels, it's really hard to dismiss. It's really hard to sort of...
It's a glass ceiling.
Unlabel. Yeah.
It's a glass ceiling for what you can and can't do. Because once I'm seeing as being black, I have certain people that don't want to talk to me, don't want to be around me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I still got friends, parents that think I'm white mm-hmm. with a really nice tan.
Mm-hmm.
Because I speak really well, and I have a bachelor's degree, and I don't have any tattoos or pit bull babies or whatever the stereotype is.
And then when I
cut my hair and I hang out with my Hispanic friends,
if I don't speak, they don't
question it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think right now, though, there's a shift because a lot of people are turning, because everyone's intermixing. Like, it's not weird to see intermixed people mm-hmm. or intermixed couples anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you see on the Oak Park Mall, they're holding hands, and I'm when I was in high school, I was still kind of like, can you do that? And now it's like just the skin color is more like I'm a chameleon, so I can go around. It's just I identify with myself, but then like the different struggles, like there's things that I participated in, and I feel like mm-hmm. if I participated mm-hmm. in that directly, mm-hmm. then I feel associated with it. But if I haven't experienced that, then I don't feel like I own any of that.
Well, I know, you know, we talked about your art and the hair and all that, but I do want to let our listeners know that you also designed, you had an illustration for making movies.
Yes, so I've had the opportunity to design one or two of their covers and like matchbooks, T-shirts.
It's been a real popular T-shirt. In fact, I have a couple of them.
I'm too big to wear T-shirts, but I have one of them hanging on my wall. They were kind of some of my when I first started doing art.
Uh-huh.
Like out of college, professionally getting paid for it. They were uh-huh. some of my first independent contractors, I guess.
One of the most recent pieces of art that I've seen, which I included on our Facebook page mm-hmm. event and the KKFI website, was the heart-shaped illustration or painting that you did, and that was for a fundraiser for Children's Mercy Hospital.
Yeah, so like Scribe and his Donald Ross and his wife set up it was called the Social Hearts Club,
mm-hmm.
and they did a couple of drink and draws, and they created these wooden hearts that they passed out, and they allowed us to paint it with our own style,
mm-hmm.
and it was used as a donation fundraiser for Children's Mercy, and that was kind of one of the points where I've been making pieces already. I was like,
I'm going
to try and throw it out there, and people loved it. So
you just keep painting and showing your work. What's coming up for you in the future here?
Trying to get more work, I guess. I don't know. Trying to stay a step ahead of being a starving artist, I guess.
But I also saw that you have been kind of clearing out your studio. You were selling some work, and
I'm in the process of trying to move to a studio. I have not found a studio yet.
Uh-huh.
I'd like to find one. I did a project with Arts KC here most recently,
uh-huh.
and I've got a possible project coming up with Urbana.
Uh-huh.
I just heard about it through Power and Light
this
week, actually. And I've just been trying to save up money here and there to get an exterior studio, and I'm trying to find a place to live right now to move my family into.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
so, but I've got work for sale. They can get on my website and hit me up.
Yeah, lots going on for you, my friend.
Mm-hmm. I feel very blessed, to be honest with you. So,
well,
no complaints.
And you do give back to the community. Like I said, you do teach at Matty Rhodes.
Yes.
And where you're the youth development coordinator. And
so that kind of entails teaching after school. Lately, it's been during school and smaller sessions.
Mm-hmm.
And then like weekend sessions. We have Map It Murals.
Mm-hmm.
So right now we just hired Jose Faust. And then Hector Casanova, and they're going to paint two different sites. And they're going to
mm-hmm.
be like a lead artist, and then we hire interns from high school and kind of like first year, 2 years college. And they get to go through the whole process of like drawing, designing, meeting the community, putting the mural up, everything.
Yeah.
I have an intern right now. Like everywhere I go, like if I talk on a radio show, if I'm going to sell some work or do a project, I'll pay her out of my own pocket if need be, just to give them that experience. Right now I'm really interested in just giving kids an artistic outlet and show them like, A, mistakes can be beautiful.
Yeah.
Art's
yeah.
awesome.
Yeah.
And then just high school kids, how do you make money after art or after high school when it's possible?
Mm-hmm. You know, that's got to be really rewarding, you know, not only just for you to be able to share and give back to the community, but also for the youth that are involved.
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, if you can't give back, if you can't share, art's all about the sharing process, so... That's the most important portion of it right now. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense to keep it all in my house and keep it to myself.
Very good words. Do you have any final thoughts or anything that you want to touch on that we hadn't really talked about yet?
I have a mural that's currently up on the side of Arts KC. Go check that out.
Where is that located?
I think it's the Southwest Boulevard. I think it's like Southwest Boulevard in Baltimore, right next to the Town Topic.
We all know where that is.
It's across the street from the Up Down Bar. So they can feel free to take pictures of it, put it on Twitter, just tag me in it. I don't really care.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for coming to talk with me this afternoon, and we'll be right back with Art Speak Radio.
Last fall, Congress passed a so-called Pension Reform Act allowing employers to reduce pension payments to retirees if a pension plan is deeply troubled. Teamster retirees face cuts. This week on the Heartland Labor Forum, we explore this issue and ask if there will be a domino effect. Then, auto worker and writer Tino Scalisi reads his short story, Huelga or Strike, about a lefty Cuban immigrant turned supervisor. That's Heartland Labor Forum, Thursday at 6 p.m., rebroadcast Friday, 5 a.m.
Van Jones.
I want to suggest to you that we have a problem that we can solve. And in solving it, we will not only rescue and redeem the project of this green revolution, but we can rescue and redeem the country as a whole and help to save the whole earth.
Pioneers, Friday morning at 9:30.
De haberle puesto fin.
listening to Art Speaks Radio on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. I'm Maria Vasquez-Boyd. Up next, we have Paul Richardson, who is the generator at the Kansas City Workshop and the lead organizer. And the lead organizer at Louder Than a Bomb, Kansas City. The Word Shop is a space devoted to creativity based on the written word, community building through sharing of stories, and it's a renaissance in language arts. So welcome to the program, Paul.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
I believe this is the first time that I've met you, so
yeah.
let's talk about what happens at the Word Shop.
Right on. Well, we want to think of the Word Shop as more of a presence in Kansas City rather than just a center.
Mm-hmm.
But we want to facilitate the sharing of stories in public spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And those stories could come through the medium of film or slam poetry or theater, music, publications, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But taking the written word,
mm-hmm.
And showcasing it somehow in a public spectacle.
Who's all involved at the Kansas City Workshop, at Casey Workshop? I know there's several. Louder Than a Bomb,
mm-hmm.
is a part of the Casey Workshop. Are the other groups, or is it mostly community based?
As of right now, you know, Louder Than a Bomb sort of started in Chicago, and myself and Glenn North and Jess Rizak over at the Jazz Museum. We were the original organizers back in 2012, and Louder Than a Bomb just hosted its second year in March, and we had 17 metro area teams, including Lincoln Prep, by the way. It was from that to see young people mingling in public spaces,
mm-hmm.
and sharing each other's stories, and the results from that, the effect that has on community, caused myself and a few other people, Nicole Higgins, who's a professor at UMKC, and several of my colleagues from Washington High School, where I've taught the last 10 years,
mm-hmm.
caused us to move this forward and see the value of it in
mm-hmm.
community and see how we can do it all the time.
So you're located at 2010 Baltimore,
yeah.
here in Kansas City, in the Crossroads.
Yeah.
So what do people do within that space?
Yeah.
Do they create? Do they edit? Yeah. Do they perform?
Yeah.
I mean, all of that.
All that. Uh-huh. And I like to think of that as being the kind of the nucleus, the workspace. And
yeah.
The Word Shop started at Washington in our old industrial arts program. It was called the Washington Word Shop. And so there is this spirit of industry and apprenticeship to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so at the space, we want to host workshops with local artists and educators, just any community member
mm-hmm.
who has
mm-hmm.
who can offer something to a young person to take on as sort of a trade in the area
mm-hmm.
of taking mm-hmm. taking like written word to a showcase. And so
mm-hmm.
there might be something about writing a script for a short film, and
mm-hmm.
and a local artist would host mm-hmm. a workshop, and we would facilitate that.
Mm-hmm. So for our listeners who are interested in finding out more information or want to know how to participate or be involved, what is your website?
It's kcwordshop.org. Yeah, and there's contact information on there. And we're on all social media too, and that's a good way to get a hold of me. So,
also, you have an event coming up called Save the Date, the KC Word Shop mm-hmm. Summer Shindig.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that.
Yeah, well, it's tomorrow night.
Yeah.
It's tomorrow night, and we'll be there from 7 to 9.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a very interactive sort of mingling. We have food catered in and,
mm-hmm.
and food and drink, and there's going to be a booth you can do this little interactive poetry
mm-hmm.
experience where you'll leave with a product there. And
mm-hmm.
There's going to be poets from Louder Than a Bomb this year that are mm-hmm. going to be doing an open mic. There will be a camera set up where we're going to have a montage of people answering the same question, and we'll record that throughout the night.
That's
and
exactly
produce a
fine.
Video from it, and just sort of let people mm-hmm. circulate through the space and see what we're doing.
So is this the first ever Save the Date
We had an event last August 1st just to again get people familiar, just start to tell the story, and we're just now getting around to like the space kind of looking the way we want it to, and truthfully the operations the way we have envisioned them won't start until probably the school year begins. Mm-hmm. That's a good time to be out there communicating with teachers and getting kids into the space and that sort of thing.
Is there certain criteria for people to participate, or is it just a desire to, you know, get started somehow?
Yeah, there's no boundaries there. Certainly I have ideas and my colleagues have ideas of their own, but I really want to see ourselves as, you know, sort of extracting ourselves from any of the operations and say, we are here to facilitate space. We're here to facilitate the sharing of stories from the next generation. Mm-hmm. I feel like the next generation are the ones carrying this load of like, what's this city? What's the world going to be like 20 years from now? These are the future policymakers of this city and of the world. We want them to know each other better. And so if I came in here with some sort of dogma or mission and like I told them to think a certain way, that's not the way it works. Yeah. You know, it's these adolescents, it's these young people that are the next generation. It needs to be what they want it to be.
It's a freedom to think and create and respond. And
Absolutely.
So live performances from Louder Than a Bomb, KC Poets, the premiere of the KC Word Shop promotional video, and the launch of the GoFundMe campaign. That's all going to take place tomorrow.
Yeah.
DJ Scheme and DJ K-Flex, food and drink, 7 to 9 tomorrow night at 2010 Baltimore.
That's right.
So is there a contact information other than the website, a phone number or?
That should all be good. I'm pretty, as my wife can attest to, I'm pretty communicative by my iPhone. Uh-huh. And so, we communicate. It's pretty easy to get a hold of us, you know. So, yeah.
Now, Paul, this kind of started as an educator. You were an educator in the public school system, and so this just sort of started the idea. We need to work with the youth in the community, and just kind of snowballed from there and gathered.
Well, I think, you know, JT alluded to it. I think even Wayne and David before. Those things are. Yeah. Teachers are strapped for time. There's no time to do anything that's maybe. I don't want to say too much because teachers work so hard. I've worked hard as a teacher, but there isn't the time and the creative space for young people to just be with their language and to grow as artists in language arts and so the projects that I tried to do in English class were almost therapeutic in nature, and to see kids sharing stories in front of the class, it changes the community of a 20 or 30 person classroom. And so I just continued to do that, and it was for me more powerful than some kind of curriculum that was in place, and there's a space for it in community, and that's why this is where I'm going.
Well, and all you have to do is ask, which rarely happens. Ask that young adult, you know, about their story. Sometimes they're just waiting to be asked. They're just waiting for that invitation.
Yeah.
You know, and you're right. It doesn't always come, with the amount of duty and work that teachers have to go through, you know, in their daily lives.
Right.
So
it's so true. And I, there's no space for say a school counselor, say in USD 500, there's a two of them in a 1,000 person school.
Yeah,
and they're so busy enrolling people into classes next year that even what they went to school for isn't being practiced, you know. And kids, young people need an outlet, man. It's vital.
So. It's so important. With adults having their lives so sort of overwrought and so much going on, you know, we tend to kind of neglect children and their needs. I'm bringing JT Daniels back for this conversation with Paul Richardson because, you know, you both are in the trenches. You both have worked with young folks and you see this need and therefore you're working with the community. What are some of the things that you see or have seen in the classroom, some needs that kids maybe are struggling with?
Mm-hmm.
Just maybe some communication or a connection to adults, or
I think some of the schools that I end up working in, like sometimes it feels like there's more students than teachers.
Yeah,
that's one thing.
Yeah.
And then another thing is just like access to like general supplies.
Hmm.
Since I work primarily after school, I get to see snippets of in school. I see a lot of behavior issues, but then you kind of figure out it's not always a behavior issue. Sometimes it's stemming from not enough attention, mm-hmm. or say something at home,
mm-hmm.
or other times it's just like they just don't know how to express themselves,
mm-hmm.
and then
mm-hmm.
a lot of times ways in which they had to express themselves have been removed from the school.
Mm-hmm.
So I have opportunity now personally to go after school and teach art and do art on the cart, because they don't have an art teacher.
Yeah,
they have
one
art teacher for an entire school.
Yeah, and here's a pencil and some paper, you know, and that's art. Mm-hmm. If you have that at all.
Yeah, like 30, 40 kids in a class, and it's like, I can't attend to each kid and give them the props and the things they need necessary, especially if they're causing problems. Mm-hmm. And I don't have the time to go through and deduce what each kid needs individually.
Yeah.
And always something like that.
Totally. I speak about particularly this generation. They're, you know, like having technology to rely on for research and for some kind of an outlet. But the school day looks for the most largely like a it's just roughly seven periods of like mm-hmm. bells and sending you from one train of thought to the next. And so you have seven different classes that have really nothing in common. So you'll spend 45 minutes in one, a loud bell will ring, and then you're in another mm-hmm. place where you're thinking about something totally different.
Like 8 hours of trying to put a square peg in a circle.
Yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like you don't have that time to just, like you said earlier, like when you find out what kids like and what their personality type is, you might find that they are just not great at language, or they may not be great at math, or the thing may not be drawing and painting, but it might be poetry.
Yeah.
But you don't have time to like allow them to just focus that and problem solve.
Yeah.
It's like every class is a math class. Either you got it right or you got it wrong. Get out.
But in your experience, have you had the opportunity where you've worked with an individual and over amount of days or times or months, they just really kaboom, they just really blossom. All they needed was sort of that jump start to their creativity. Do you find that happens very often or at all?
I see it all the time.
Yeah.
Especially when you give them the chance to like when I do after school classes at East High School, mm-hmm. We didn't take over. We started assisting with they had an art club meeting,
mm-hmm.
and the teacher was like, that was his time to just kind of not blow off steam, but just allow some of the kids that actually might want to be there. And
mm-hmm.
then we opened it up, so it wasn't just three kids showing up. We opened it up to like 20, 30 kids to see mm-hmm. who would actually show up.
Mm-hmm.
And my first project was like, I don't really care what it looks like, how it turns out.
Yeah.
I just want you to work on something while you're here. If this is what I give you to work on, work on it.
Mm-hmm.
And if the way that I ask you to work on that is wrong, problem solve and show me how you want to communicate that. And then I had like
mm-hmm.
three or four kids like over spring break. I said, hey, I give you guys a full week. Here's a sheet of paper. It's
mm-hmm.
11 by
mm-hmm.
17. I want it top to bottom, side to side, filled up. And I want you to draw what you feel like your high school experience has been like.
Wow.
Sum it up in an image. I don't care how it looks. It can be abstract. But when you get back, I want you to explain it to me.
Mm-hmm.
Out of like 15 kids, I only had three kids come back and do that.
Mm-hmm.
And the three kids that came back and did that were kids that they said, I can't draw a stick figure.
Mm-hmm.
And they
mm-hmm.
came with the book. And I have them pinned up in my office. I always keep them.
Yeah.
I take photos, put them on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, here's your reward. I'll buy you a sketchbook. And then they just start going at it. And I'm like, that's what it's all about. It's all about that learning and experiencing yourself.
Yeah. Do you ever combine, in your experiences, do you ever combine like live painting and maybe a poetry read or poetry slam?
Yeah,
that's
a great. I mean, the only time I've facilitated that is where we've had artists live at a space,
mm-hmm.
a visual artist live at a space doing a mural or something while there's a spoken word thing happening. There's also this I've heard recently of like art journaling and this kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
and I think all of it is some sort of way of taking what's rattling around in the crazy monkey cage in your brain and getting it out to the world in some kind of way. And it's all fair game, illustrating it some sort of way. Yeah.
Because I know with poetry slams, I know there's an interest in the younger writers. That is sort of what they gravitate towards.
Mm-hmm.
I won't generalize and say that's they all do that, but there's also that physical activity of an actual live painting that occurs that I think is a real exciting sort of a partnership.
Totally. We have art. We're getting ready to. I mean, it's leaning against the wall right now. I get back to work today, but art. Visual Goodies. I don't know if you forget his name.
Aaron Sutton.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he's got a piece that we have WORD on four different panels.
Wow.
That's a beautiful piece. And then I have a senior at Washington that donated a piece. And it's all one and the same to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
So visual art is
just getting the chance to facilitate. Getting us to put our time down and do something different or venture out. Mostly it's just space and time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We'll have a J.T. Daniels piece here pretty soon.
When I'm with a kid, my biggest rule is I will not paint or draw anything for you, but I will be here to assist you and encourage you. So I think the most that I'll actually do, and it makes it awesome for me, is I can come up with the initial concept. I'll sell the initial concept. I'll get the materials, the paint, the whatever, and I'll even do some initial line work, but I love to see them fill it in and kind of go off with it and see what they do.
But there's a beauty to that they're participating, but they're also learning, and you know there's a sense of pride. There's just so many things that go along with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Maybe I should figure out how to do an event. We do some spoken word or something like that.
This is kind of why I brought you back to the microphone.
I'd be interested in it. Just work out the logistics.
Kind of how community works.
It's true, and I think because the arts community, the literary community, and actually in performers and musicians, we all really do embrace one another. You know, I don't necessarily think that there's a competition, but we just embrace each other and support one another. So, you know, that's a terrific thing about this community.
It is. It moves things forward. I mean, even while I'm sitting here listening to Wayne read his poem, and I'm a 40-year-old man, and I'm straight and married, but I am now into his world and moved forward in my thinking about what a gay marriage looks like. And I'm moved by that. And so in a small sort of way, and it happens perpetually, you know, through the sharing of this stuff.
Yeah. I like the challenge of the forward progress and the forward learning, and then teaching my kids is hey, if you're a drawer and designer, this cat's over here doing that, why don't you help him with his book cover and vice versa? Why don't you try to transcribe his experience that he's writing, he's telling about, and why don't you put that into a visual language or vice versa?
Yeah, that's beautiful. Any final words, Paul?
No, just come down to 2010 Baltimore tomorrow at 7 to 9 p.m. and come check it out.
This will give our listeners a sort of a sneak peek of what actually takes place there at KC Word Shop. So thank you so much for joining us on the program today, and thank you, J.T. Daniels.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you for having us. Glad to be here.
I want to tell our listeners that next week on the program for June 24th, we have singer-songwriter Heather Thornton, who's written a children's book. She's going to share that information with us. We also have Casey Zine, who will join us. Bess Wallerstein of the Kauffman Center for Performing Arts will talk about the Future Stages Festival that's happening Sunday, June 28th. I would like to thank all of my guests today. Thank you, Wayne Critois and David Wayne Reed, J.T. Daniels, Paul Richardson. Thank you all for sharing your stories with us. I also want to tell our listeners to stay tuned for Afternoon Jazz with Jeff Harshbarger at 1 o'clock. At 3 o'clock, Old G's Hangout with Groovy Grant. 6 o'clock, All Souls Forum. 7 o'clock, American Roots. And at 9, Classical Challenge. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in today. And I do want to give a shout-out to John Stonebreaker from Gardner, Kansas, who asked about our theme song, which is Space Golf. Thank you so much for tuning in. Honey, I'm coming home.